You are listening to Geek Speak. Support for Geek Speak and KD&K comes from your membership and from Louie the Computer Guy, providing PC and Mac repair, networking, support, tutoring, and web design. Be secure, informed, and connected. 948-7992. And from Umbrella Roofing, providing roofing contractor services, architectural sheet metal fabrication for the Roaring Fork and Eagle Valleys. Umbrella Roofing can be reached at umbrella-roofing.com and 704-9130. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer, from Roaring Fork Help Desk, in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
How's it going, Matt?
Going good.
Good. Wow, the interwebs are just buzzing with interesting stories today.
Excellent.
Yes. So do you know who the father of the internet is? Who's recognized as being the father of the internet?
I know his name. I can't think of it, though. I've
Vint Cerf.
Vint Cerf. That's right.
Yeah. Vint Cerf. So, you know, that's always kind of an interesting story. What do you know about the origins of the internet?
Well, I've read up on Usenet and GopherNet. ARPANET was one of the first interconnects between, I'm trying to remember which two, Chicago and Berkeley or something. I can't remember where they were on that one, but ARPANET was the first kind of interconnect for some of the large universities doing stuff in the, I think, late 50s or mid or late 50s.
Got it. Not that I know the answer here. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. I'd have to go read up on that. It's been a while.
No, it's you know, and I just, you know, kind of have, you know, the faded memories of, you know, I actually used to be kind of a wonk when it came to studying the history of the internet. But, you know, it basically started with the Department of Defense. And the idea was creating an alternate method of communication in case of some sort of a catastrophic emergency in the country. And then they started, a lot of the universities started tying into it. And so it started to become a research tool at a certain point. And all of this is very, I don't know, general and vague. But yeah, it actually looks like the internet, the TCP/IP, which is the internet protocol suite that we use to communicate to transfer packets on the internet, was developed by Robert E. Kahn and Vint Cerf. And and became the standard networking protocol on ARPANET, incorporating concepts from the French Cyclades project, directed by Louis Poussin. Anyway, we won't go any further down that rabbit hole. But the reason I came up with that is that the father of the internet has joined tech leaders in condemning the repeal plan, the net neutrality repeal plan. And you know, I mean, if anybody should be listening, this is the father of the internet we're talking about here. So anyway, anybody that wants to call in with their computer problems or, you know, to correct any errors in our reporting here, whatever, 970-963-2976. Call into GeekSpeak. We'll help you. We'll walk you through jiggling your cables, correcting your SMTP server port settings.
That or doing a certificate.
That's a big one.
Yeah, doing a certificate on SendMail or on
really
Nginx.
You feel up to doing that? Helping somebody do a certificate on the air.
Well, through the power of the internet, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, we have yet to, like, actually remote into one of our listeners' computers during the show and work on it. So, you know, that could be, I mean, if there's anybody out there that, you know, is feeling super trusting and has something wonky going on with their computer.
Yeah, you can go to my service website and click the big blue button.
Yeah, there you go.
And then I'll get a notification that somebody clicked the big blue button.
Or you can go to 898.tv/Louie and I'll get on your computer. And however, if your computer is singing Chinese music or has an alarm going off or anything like that, you're probably best starting out by turning it off and back on again. So which is usually the case.
It's a good place to start.
Yeah. I had a technician dare to use that phrase with me the other day on the phone. And
dare?
I could hear him smiling over the phone. He said, "Have you tried turning it back off and back off and back on again?" And I said, "Yes, several times." So
it is a lot of fun when you get a technician on the support line who goes, "Oh, you're a technician." I mean, it's great.
Oh yeah, definitely. No, they appreciate it a lot because they know that, you know, when they say press any key, you're not going to be hunched over the keyboard looking for the any key, you know, because that was.
Yes, a button will already have been smashed.
Do you remember that, the whole any key thing?
Yeah.
Yeah? Because, you know, back in the day, if you left a floppy drive in the 3.5 drive and you rebooted your computer, it would try to boot off the floppy drive and the message would come up and it'd say, boot device not found, press any key to continue. And I literally had people call me up and say, you know, I've got this message on my screen. It says to press the any key. And I have looked through my keyboard like 16 times and I cannot find the any key anywhere on there.
I think I may have a couple novelty red any keys.
Oh, that's
somewhere.
That's a great joke.
Yeah.
Nice. So
you're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK 963-2976. Call in with your computer questions, problems, or just a topic of discussion.
Mm-hmm. So do you know who the inventor of the World Wide Web was?
Let's see. Al Gore?
It's not a trick question. George W. Bush. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
He invented the interwebs. That's
the interwebs. Yeah, okay.
He was the one who invented that. Tim Berners-Lee. Have you heard that name before?
Yes, I do know that name, yeah.
All right. So anyway, this story goes, more than 20 internet pioneers and leaders, including the father of the internet, Vint Cerf, the inventor of the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee, and the Apple co-founder, Steve Wozniak, have urged the FCC to cancel its vote to repeal net neutrality, describing the plan as based on a flawed and factually inaccurate understanding of how the internet works. Imagine that. A flawed and factually inaccurate understanding of the internet from
the government.
Mere mortals.
Yes.
In the government. So, to quote, the FCC's rushed and technically incorrect proposed order to repeal net neutrality protections without any replacement is an imminent threat to the internet we worked so hard to create. It should be stopped, said the technology luminaries in an open letter to lawmakers with oversight of the Federal Communications Commission on Monday. The letter refers to the FCC's proposed Restoring Internet Freedom Order, RIFO, which removes net neutrality protections introduced in 2015 to ensure that internet service providers such as Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon would treat all web content and applications equally and not throttle, block, or prioritize some content in return for payment. The FCC's vote on the proposed order is scheduled for the 14th of December. It is expected to be approved. It is important to understand that the FCC's proposed order is based on a flawed and factually inaccurate understanding of internet technology, the pioneers state, adding that the flaws were outlined in detail in a 43-page comment submitted by 200 tech leaders to the FCC in July. So what do you think? Do you think that they probably read that 43-page document?
I doubt it.
And if they read it, do you think they understood it? So
probably not.
Have you ever heard that saying, "I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you"?
Yeah.
That's a classic case of that. So anyway, you know, I guess what can people do? Can they call their congressman?
Yes.
Yes. Call your congressman. Write your congressman. There are probably some petitions you can sign, probably a oodle of those.
Yep.
But, you know, I'd like to encourage everybody because, I mean, really, truly, the whole internet thing will change drastically if this thing, you know, gets put into place and companies start, you know, trying to profit from it, because it's just not going to be good for anybody but the rich, you know, the CEOs who want to put new tires on all four of their Rolls Royces, you know.
Oh, I figured you're going to do the, like, McLaren F1 or the Bugatti, which is $250,000 a set of tires.
I'm old school. You know, okay. What can I say? You know, But you see, if you have a gold-plated Rolls Royce, you got to put gold-plated tires on, and then it gets really expensive.
Okay, okay.
You know? So, yep. So anyway, that's one of the stories we're following on the interweb. And have you heard a story about how this is kind of an interesting one? I don't have a whole lot of information, but I'm just wondering if you've heard about it. A Twitter user has reported that Starbucks in-store Wi-Fi is using their captive portal to briefly mine the Monero cryptocurrency during the 10-second delay splash screen. How do you like that?
I read a brief article that other large companies were doing that. They were running some sort of cryptocurrency mining, you know, in the background of the browser as you were browsing their web page.
Okay.
So it's not beyond the realm of possibility in the slightest. Yeah.
Well, you know, I got to say that my pay-for-use Wi-Fi network that I'm operating up in Canyon Creek has been doing that for years. So, no, I'm just kidding.
Great. Back when it was $10 a Bitcoin?
Yeah, exactly. And no, I have no idea how one would go about mining cryptocurrency, but I guess that's takes us with a good segue into, so I guess Bitcoin got hacked. You know anything about that
story? It was one of the mining cooperatives. I didn't get a chance to read it in detail, but so there's solo mining where you can set up the software to run the mining tools on your CPU and GPU. The GPU is much faster at it because the calculations themselves are relatively simple, so that the graphics processing unit can run the calculation.
Okay.
And obviously that's why they're so much better at it. They're much more streamlined for certain simple calculations.
Do you like even get a cool screensaver while this is happening?
I don't think so. It's not like, I don't think it's like SETI.
It's not like SETI? Okay. Got it. All right.
Oh, darn.
Anyway, go ahead.
And so that's called solo mining. You're using your computer or computers to run the software.
Just a man and his mule
out
there mining cryptocurrency.
Right.
His cyber mule. Sorry.
And so... the other one is, and there's a couple others. I'd have to go look at my books. I haven't got to this section yet. But from a cursory, so the next one is there's pools.
Okay.
And so somebody writes a piece of software that will run the mining software on your computer, and then you all are working towards solving one of the blocks. And so if you're able to solve the block... And these happen depending on the currency every 15 seconds or every hour or two, depending on the currency.
Okay.
And so these, you're working towards solving these very complicated equations. And so obviously if you have, you know, a couple hundred computers or a couple thousand or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of computers trying to run these calculations, the chances of them completing the block becomes higher. And if you complete the block, then you get a Bitcoin.
Wow. And that's a big reward.
Right now it is. And so...
How many people do you need to have in your cooperative to make it really, you know... I mean, are we talking a dozen people? Are we talking hundreds of people? You know,
there's some Bitcoin mining calculators online.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could go on there and calculate, you know, based on the outcome that you're looking for, how many computers and GPUs you'd have to configure to do that.
Okay. Got it. Wow. This is I'm somewhere along the line I've got to hole up and learn enough about mining Bitcoin. It's just
I might try mining one of the other ones.
Yeah.
Like Elysium or Litecoin or Dashcoin or something.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's a little less mainstream at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I know that there's a lot of people are feeling pretty what would you call it? They're being pretty guarded about their Bitcoin participation. So, how much Bitcoin got stolen? You know?
Oh, what was that? $70 million or something?
Wow!
It was a and so one of the mining companies had a wallet that this was all going all these completed blocks was going into. So they had we could do the math, but. Mm-hmm. Like 7,000 Bitcoin, let's say 7,000 Bitcoin in there or something like that. And somebody figured out their wallet ID and how to access the wallet and were able to transfer the currency out to some other wallet.
Huh. So But doesn't it, it seems to me like, and I'm going to kind of like step into like the really hardcore geek world here for a second, but that there would be a unique hash on that currency that had been stolen. So it would be like, in essence, be like marked, cyber marked, cyber but, cryptocurrency.
But the crypto part of it means that it's untraceable. So,
okay.
So it's in the, there is a hash and that's called the blockchain. So there's a file, and I have a copy of it on my computer because I'm running the wallet. So okay. I have 143 gig set of files that represents the blockchain, and that is every transaction that has ever happened in Bitcoin.
All right.
And so, but that's encrypted, but it's confirmed through this calculation process.
Yeah, somehow or another, I completely, you know, in my formulating my thing about the hash, skipped over the encrypted part.
Yes, crypto.
the crypto part of the cryptocurrency. Yeah. So, okay. So, the stuff is ultimately, it's like, I don't know, it's...
You'd have to solve for the original key to be able to...
Yeah.
To tear that that audit log apart and figure out where things actually went, which theoretically is possible, but it may have been... I think I read that... The original encryption key was deleted, so it's
lost forever.
Lost forever, unless you have enough computing power to find it.
Oh, wow.
But I don't.
It's buried deep.
Yes,
in Mount Cryptocurrency. So, well, you know, that's. It, I guess it's only fitting. You know, it seems only fitting to me that, you know, Bitcoin was, you know, kind of comes from dubious roots in the first place. And so I guess it's only fitting that dubious behavior should, you know, come into play in the world of Bitcoin.
Yeah,
so.
I wonder how insurance on that works.
You think you can insure Bitcoin?
Well, I'm wondering if you can insure the company that was running the mining project, if they could insure some part of their project. Because theoretically, it may have some monetary value, but I don't know how that would work.
Yeah. Well, you know, it certainly seems like, I mean, if we're talking about setting up a virtual company to mine Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrency, that, I mean, the minute you start going out and trying to secure financing to start up your Bitcoin mining company, then... Those people are going to go, well, what kind of insurance do you have, you know, to make sure that, you know, that our investment doesn't just go down the tubes when somebody breaks into your cyber wallet, you know.
So I'll be interested to see when the FTC gets into all this. It'll be very interesting to see how that all works out, or maybe it's just uncontrollable.
Well, you know, I guess I go back to, you know, they're going to have somebody that's really, you know, that's got a bigger brain than me, which isn't saying a lot, but, you know, somebody who's got a bigger brain than a lot of people to like understand just basically the premise or the whole idea, the concept of, you know, what it is, how it's mined, how it's transferred, how it's owned, how it's redeemed. You know, I mean, that's one of the, you know, that's...
Yeah, I would take the risk of having one of my clients pay me in Bitcoin.
Yeah?
Yep. So if they want to transfer from their wallet to my wallet, that's... I would accept that as a form of payment, as a experiment.
Okay. Got it. You know, I suppose I would too, you know, as long as I could cash it out quick if I needed it. That's all.
Well, find somebody else who wants Bitcoin. That's the whole point of a currency, is to be able to trade... Yeah. Exactly. Items for it.
Yeah. Nice. So we still have a few minutes. If anybody wants to call in with their tech questions, 970-963-2976. And Matt and I are here, and we are tan, rested, and ready because nobody's asked us any hard questions yet today. I'm guessing, you know.
No, I had
You've been off all day, right?
No, I had a router changeover and we're doing a test where one of my clients has to dial out using a modem. And so one of the companies that I work with, we're testing to see if a digital or not analog phone converter to digital through a cloud PBX system will maintain a 300 or 1200 baud connection.
Wow. And what are you doing over a 300 baud connection? Are you... I just can't think of anything that happens slowly enough to do it over that slow of a connection. It's, I mean, what's the idea? What problem are you trying to solve?
Being able to connect to, connect to certain panels.
Oh, okay. I get you.
Yep.
All right. Now you're talking in a language I understand.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh yeah, I've been there. I've done that. So, and so, so let me ask you, Matt, have you ever heard of a thing called a shotgun modem? Are you familiar with that?
That sounds familiar, but I can't think of it.
So back in the day, right before broadband.
Oh, wait, is that the one that has the little like hook for the, or is that before that?
No. No, okay. It basically is a modem with two telephone ports in it. And if you have two different phone numbers, and some internet providers, this is back in the days of dial-up, but some internet providers would allow you to do this free of charge, believe it or not. But it would basically do what they call aggregate the two dial-up connections, you know. So you get, you know, a couple of 56K connections, and you end up with 112K connection, you know. You basically start up one, mm-hmm. get it connected, and then you fire up the second one and, you know, get connected on it. And,
nice.
And there you go, man. You're screaming down the internet at 112K. So... which is now, in retrospect,
nothing.
1/10 of the slowest internet connection you can buy right now, or roughly.
Roughly, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, because it'd be like 5 kilobytes per second, or something like that, would be the mm-hmm. total available throughput.
Yeah, yeah, but it seems screaming fast, man.
You know, when your graphics are, I mean, 3 or 4K.
I could pull up the Google homepage in like 20 seconds, so.
That slow?
Yeah. Oh.
you must have not had your images turned off.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't do that one anymore.
Yeah, oh, definitely not. So, you know, I don't know if we ever talked about it, but my theory on why Google has been such a tremendous success is that if you look at the actual code that generates the Google homepage, with the exception of the Google Doodle, you know, which is the artwork above the
right.
search box that changes every week or every day. If you look at the basic code of that page, it hasn't changed in 20 years, you know.
Probably not very much.
I'm probably exaggerating, but well, at least not 15.
Well, I was going to say that the only thing that's probably changed is, you know, it's gone from HTML1 to HTML2 to HTML4.1 mm-hmm. to HTML5, although... I don't know that they need HTML5, so I, mm-hmm. you know, they may have just changed the document type, but
yeah.
I'll bet 99 or 98% of the code really hasn't changed.
Yeah, and you know, that's absolute genius, because the instinct, you know, as the internet gets bigger and better and bolder and you know, more glitzy and, you know, fancier, and everything's moving and changing and, you know, refreshing and recycling, you know, they identified that if we just have a really good, solid product that loads up
in an instant. Yeah, on modern...
And just does what people want it to do. Yeah. It's really simple. It's what do you want to find, type it in, click the button,
yep.
you know.
Well, I wonder how... So, well, I guess the only thing I can think of that's really changed over the course of Google, having that their front page, is really the list below, because that's going to have to be some sort of AJAX call or something,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, where you start typing in what is, and then
you mean the actual search results?
Well, no,
you
know, the list before you get to your search results. So if you're at google.com
uh-huh.
and you start typing in what is, it'll give you mm-hmm. a list of, you know, what is a car, what is, you know, whatever the list is.
Okay, got it.
That one might not be able to be read on the...
Yeah.
On the
Well, yeah, I'm sure that...
That's the only thing I can think of.
Some of the back-end technology, you know, and that's basically what we're talking yeah. about there. And but the actual page itself has remained so lightweight.
Very simple.
And, yep. And it's, you know... And shoot, you can fire up a copy of Internet Explorer 4 and open up Google's homepage, you know.
Still,
you may
still
get a little
work.
Bar across the top going, yeah, you probably should upgrade your browser, you know. Or whatever, even a but copy of NCSA Mosaic, you know,
yeah,
and open up Google homepage. You know.
And you can still run a Google search and get Firefox or something.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's quite a history we've been through. You know, I'll never forget when the, you know, my first internet connection was through Prodigy. Do you remember Prodigy at all?
CompuServe.
Yeah, it was close on the heels of CompuServe. And you think about how many people got introduced to the internet through a free CD
yeah.
that came in the mail. And they're like, wow, they gave me something for free. And they plugged it into their computer and then found out that their free service was going to cost them $9.99 a month starting next month. You know, so anyway, our listeners have wasted another perfectly good 25 minutes listening to Geek Speak. And I'll let you close it up, Matt.
All right. You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McBear, with Roaring Fork Help Desk in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
Hey, thanks for running the board, Matt.
Absolutely. A pleasure.
Uh-huh. We'll see you guys next week.
Yes. Have a great evening, everyone.
Uh-huh. Or they wanted to listen to